It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us once again. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, last week we talked about what Wes and I have referred to as the dueling power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And to lay a little foundation here, a little background, first of all, we want to hasten to say that these are the exceptions to the rule and that, generally speaking, everyone has a power of attorney, needs a well-drafted and specific power of attorney, and nine times out of ten, once our parent or grandparent or aunt or uncle becomes elderly and needs our assistance pursuant to the durable power of attorney, mm-hmm. it works just like a charm. It works well.
But there are exceptions.
There are the exceptions. And the exceptions to the rule are many times the ones that find their way into the lawyer's office for resolution. And the setup, basically, of this duel is that the principal or the named the person who has had the power of attorney signed mm-hmm. on their behalf, they signed the power of attorney to their agent. The agent begins to act, and then someone in the family thinks that the agent is either not doing an effective job, or is taking advantage of the principal in some way. Decisions are being made that they do not think that are in the best interest of the principal. Or maybe they're just mad that they're not the agent under the power of attorney and have emotional issues concerning that. And they then go and they get another power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
They confront the principal with, you know, the quote, dueling power of attorney. And so now we have this conflict. The principal, of course, is called in the middle. And we have, more than one agent asserting authority and power.
Mm. So, when you talk about a will, one always replaces another one, but mm-hmm. here they may be done different times, different places. And
well, technically, that's a good point, Ben. The latest power of attorney does, in fact, almost always any new power of attorney is going to say that I hereby revoke any prior power mm-hmm. of attorney, much as you mentioned, just like a last will and testament.
Mm-hmm.
So it will revoke the prior power of attorney, and then once it's recorded with the register of deeds, it becomes the operative new power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the agent under the previous power of attorney feels that the new power of attorney, that the principal didn't understand what they were signing at the time that they signed it, that there's only a new power of attorney because my brother or my sister wants to take advantage of my father.
Right.
You know, all of those kinds of issues, a myriad of different reasons get explained to the lawyer.
Or they don't even know it. They don't even know they got another one.
Right.
So it could be any number of things, right?
So the next thing that happens, Ben, is there has got to be some resolution here. I mean, the principal is called in the middle. They might not know that they're called in the middle, as we would expect. After
mm-hmm.
all, they're not doing very well. That's why they have an operative power of attorney to begin with. They may be in a facility at this point. They may be home, but they may be bedridden. They may have some dementia, be it moderate or be it, you know, just slight dementia.
Right.
The circumstances are extremely varied here. But the bottom line is that there is going to have to be some resolution. And so what now happens, I'll let Mr. Collins take over from here and kind of tell us how these cases end up getting framed up for a court proceeding.
Okay. All right. Comes to you now.
All right. So, of course, last week we talked, you know, a little bit more about the actual dueling power of attorney, and now we want to lead up, as Cecil's indicated, to, you know, what do we do in order to kind of break this tie or break this cycle? Because, I mean, the dueling power of attorney can go back and forth. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it could just continue in perpetuity and, you know, until the person passes away, I guess, you know. But So if you're in a situation where, let's say that the person has gotten a power of attorney, and let's say that, you know, you're one of the children, but you're not the attorney, in fact, under the power of attorney, but you think the actual power of attorney is taking mom's money or conveying mom's stuff to,
right.
But you can't get to mom, mm-hmm. because, you know, maybe, you know, she lives elsewhere, you live elsewhere. Maybe this power of attorney, this attorney in fact, is kind of guarding her, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. I mean, what can you do there? Well, you know, first of all, the person who feels as though mom's assets are being taken really doesn't have standing to do much of anything at that point in time as far as like suing for mom,
mm-hmm.
like breach of fiduciary duty, sister, you're taking right. mom's money. Or fraud or unjust enrichment or any of these type of, you know, lawsuits, because you're not mom. Who mm-hmm. has that standing to stand up for mom? The guard or the power of attorney does.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the person who is abusing it.
Yeah.
So,
or alleged to abuse it. Yes.
Yeah, alleged to abuse it. So we end up, you know, in many times in these cases, with a guardianship being filed,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, obviously we're in a situation where we feel as though this person, the principal, is being manipulated, and usually they're elderly. Sometimes they're truly incompetent. Sometimes they're just weak, you know, because they're old
mm-hmm.
and maybe feeble and not able to really make decisions for themselves. And they're certainly more subject to undue influence than the average person. We all know how that works. You get a little older, obviously, you know, you become more susceptible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so many times we have to file for guardianship in order to bring all these issues to the table. And today's program really isn't about all the ins and outs of guardianship, but just how a guardianship works in this particular situation. We've had many programs on the guardianship itself. We're going to talk about it, you know, more generally today. But when you file the guardianship, of course, what you're doing is you're petitioning the clerk of court for a hearing on the determination as to whether this individual, you know, is incompetent. And maybe the individual presents okay. Maybe mm-hmm. the individual in an isolated circumstance would present okay.
Right.
But once you start that process for a petition for adjudication of incompetence and appointment of a guardian, you know, you have the right at that point in time to get discovery. You have the right at that point in time for a guardian ad litem to be appointed. That's a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And the guardian ad litem is a, you know, a third party attorney who is going to evaluate the situation and make a recommendation to the court. So even if you're in a situation where, let's say, the principal is maybe good some days, bad some days,
right.
and we're concerned about whether the court is really going to find this person incompetent or whether we're just going to go through this guardianship case, and the clerk is going to say, well, this principal, this respondent is competent, and then we achieve nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind that through the guardianship process, we can get records, we can get discovery, we can see how this principal or mm-hmm. how this agent for the principal has been acting under the power of attorney. Has this agent been taking mom's money? Has
right.
this agent been signing deeds, you know, conveying property to her side of the family? Has this agent, you know, put herself on the bank account as a joint owner so that that bank account goes all to her upon mom's death? You know, these
basically
kind of things.
Unjust enrichment of some sort.
Right? That's right. So if we see that there's some activity like that, and really keep in mind here, we can't get to that. We
mm-hmm.
can't get that information unless the sister in this scenario would just give it to us,
right.
you know, but we can't force it to be provided to us until we proceed with that guardianship. But through the guardianship, we can conduct discovery and get that information. Now, obviously, if the information bears fruit like
mm-hmm.
we think it will, because we think that the sister here is helping herself and manipulating mom and taking her money and so on and so forth, then the likelihood that the clerk of court is going to just dismiss this case
mm-hmm.
is unlikely.
Hmm.
I mean, it's much more likely that part of it plays a part in whether the court makes a determination of incompetence. It just does. I mean, it's supposed to be a bifurcated hearing where, you know, you look at the issue of incompetency first, and you don't even get to the issue about who the guardian should be second. But if there's evidence that's brought forward, you know, to the clerk indicating that there, you know, is manipulation, there is fraud, there is self-dealing, those kind of things, then obviously that's evidence mm-hmm. that would probably support that this person, the respondent, can't handle mm-hmm. his or her affairs. Okay. So, you know, the likelihood, if, you know, those facts are presented to the clerk that some action is not going to be taken is not very high. It's more likely that there would probably be, an adjudication of incompetence and appointment of a guardian. Even if, mm-hmm. let's say the clerk finds that it's probably not the best interest to name any of these sisters in the scenario I was painting here. Maybe we need to just name an independent third party, like the public guardian, someone who's going to oversee this person's mm-hmm. money, someone who's going to oversee this person's assets, this person's well-being, so on and so forth, who may be a third party, and someone who is going to proceed to take care of whatever this power of attorney did.
Question back to the issue of standing. First of all, you said unlike an executor or administrator who has to provide an accounting, mm-hmm. the person who is the attorney in fact under a power of attorney isn't required to do that, are they, on a regular basis?
Not by statute,
right?
But many powers of attorney have language in them requiring mm-hmm. the production of an accounting. Mm-hmm. But most of the powers of attorney that you see, if you read them closely, that have that type of language in them, require the accounting to be produced to the principal, mm-hmm. not to the siblings, not to the other family members.
Heirs. Right.
So what good does that really do us if the accounting is produced to the principal mm-hmm. and we can't get to the principal? So you have to just take each power of attorney as it's written because mm-hmm. different powers of attorney are drafted in different ways.
More to come in a moment here on Dueling Powers of Attorney, or if you have any other civil law question, you can give us a call at 800-818-2255 or these numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins here on the Talk Station. And we're talking about civil law and also about dueling powers of attorney. But let's see what Marilyn has to say in Jacksonville. Joins us now. Hi, Marilyn. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well.
I just want to make a comment about something you talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
You had played a commercial on it right before you went off. A woman called up, was calling up, saying that her mother had been ill.
Yeah, I believe that was you on that, wasn't it?
That was me.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. And I just wanted to say back in 2016, I made the call, and Andrew Foster came down and took care of everything.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So glad to hear that.
And he was the greatest, and I'm thanking you again because I think you could get somebody else in that commercial.
Yeah, we'll get a new one up there now, Marilyn, but thank you for that response.
Yeah. And I just wanted to call Mr. Harvell and Mr. Collins that Andrew Forrest is a real keeper. He is the best.
And thank
so
you.
Are they all. And anytime I have any trouble, you can hear from me.
All right,
everything
Marilyn.
Is fine, and you got my original up there. But again, thank you so much, and I wish you all a blessed Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Thanks, Marilyn.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Might hear that one before the show's over, but I'm not sure.
I remember Marilyn's file well. Uh-huh. And we had a circumstance where she really did need, you know, one of the lawyers to go and see her.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she doesn't live in Moorhead City, so it was a bit of a track down mm-hmm. to see her, but she was so appreciative. And thank you, Marilyn, for calling in. And I'm so glad we were able to send somebody, mm-hmm. to her house and get her affairs in order. And, I know it's a big relief for her to know that her affairs are in order. And yes, Andrew did do a very fine job on that file. So it's a good thing. When we're able to help people,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Now, I want to follow up on what she said with regard to Mr. Foster. You know, mm-hmm. Andrew's been an attorney with us for, what, 2 or 3 years now, and he fits such a great niche in our office because we deal with so many tax-related issues mm-hmm. and estates and so on and so forth. and he has his master's in taxation from the University of Florida, which is such a mm-hmm. valuable letter to put behind your name. What is that?
Right.
LLM behind your name. Because, you know, Cecil and I, over the years, we've dealt with, you know, tax issues, and we know 95% of those issues, and then maybe 99%, but that last 1, 2, 3% Andrew just knows it right off the top of his head. Not only that, he's a really sharp guy.
Very impressive on Thursday mornings with us.
Very sharp guy, good analytical skills. So he's a great asset to, Carter County and our firm and this area. And I'm glad that Marilyn called in and gave him the props that he deserves.
Yeah.
You know, on this, because in her original case, she was perplexed about what to do. And here you have, with a dueling power of attorney, you have similar things. You have siblings coming to you or others coming to you. They don't know what to do here now.
Right.
That's often where it's presented to you.
That's right. And like we were saying, you know, in this guardianship, dueling power of attorney scenario, you know, in many cases, you know, we're able to get it resolved without having to go through the guardianship process. But really, that is the tool in the toolbox when you just come, you know, to loggerheads with regard to it. You can't get anywhere and you feel as though the assets are being squandered away. But I can also say this, that a lot of times we end up in this situation because the power of attorney, the person who's in control of the assets, is just not being transparent, is not answering questions, is not giving us information, where in their mind they think, well, why are you asking about this?
Right.
I don't like you anyway.
Right.
But really, they may not be doing anything wrong. So for
they
those
just have a trust factors off.
That's right. So those attorneys in fact out there handling mom or dad's affairs or aunt or uncle's affairs or a friend's affairs or whomever it may be, think about that whatever you do with using the power of attorney, think that at any point in time, you may have to describe to someone or disclose to someone, be it the clerk of court, be it, you know, a judge, so on and so forth, everything that you have done. And in the event that you follow that and you, you obviously act in a way that's in the best interest of the principal in every step of the way, then you should have no problem with being transparent, with providing bank accounts, with providing check images, so on and so forth. Another thing that I would say is that don't deal in cash transactions, even if the caregivers want to be paid in cash. If that's the case, that happens sometimes, well, you've got to have a paper trail. If you have to do a cash transaction at some point in time, then use written receipts that are signed. Okay. Because we can't trace cash that well.
Right.
Okay. In the event that you're commingling your funds with the principal's funds, which you really shouldn't do. But if you do that, you know, you've got to bifurcate it. You got to separate it out so we can follow their money and follow your money. If you do those things and you act in a way that's always in the best interest of the principal and you act transparently and you separate out their assets from your assets, then a lot of times that will help us to avoid this dueling power of attorney process. And don't think as though you need to be quiet with regard to what you're doing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because you may end up just because you're not being transparent, you may get served a summons and complaint one day. And that's, you know, something that can be avoided in many, many cases.
Again, 6 minutes before the hour now here on Coastal Daybreak, and Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. As always, you can go online at harvellandcollins.com. You can find out what they have to say on their website, too. A lot of great information there. And you can also reach them by giving them a call or by sending them an email, too. If you want to call and make an appointment, it's 726-9050 at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and we'll have more to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240, 755. And, of course, Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. And so where do we go from this point now?
Well, you know, we're in the guardianship posture and we're proceeding through this process. And, you know, there's this kind of process of a guardianship can be very expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's again, another reason, just be transparent, provide the information, and hopefully we can avoid it. And as we were talking about off air, you know, a lot of times we can reach a resolution as well. In the event that we can all communicate with regard to it, then we can a lot of times avoid the guardianship by even making co-powers of attorney, or if we don't make co-powers of attorney, mm-hmm. have a specific agreement this reached in writing, properly drafted agreement with regard to disclosure of how that power of attorney is being used.
Right.
So that we have that more transparency, the more involvement, those type things. Now,
could be a reporting.
Yeah, there could be by agreement. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, in the event that the principal is not adjudicated incompetent, then, you know, they could sign a new document, mm-hmm. you know, and they usually are going to be involved in the negotiation process, you know, in the event that they are, you know, able to sign new documents.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're not going to want infighting between their family members.
Right.
And if a resolution can be reached, then, you know, they would normally be happy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times the communications on the front end is going to help us to avoid, you know, these kind of problems later on where we have to go through a guardianship and then the court may, you know, make a harsh ruling where it just totally removes the family members from the involvement.
Hmm.
And then we've got a third party like the public guardian who is a local attorney or every county has one basically,
mm-hmm.
who would then serve as the guardian. And then the family members then aren't dealing at all with the assets of the principal. They're dealing with the new guardian because the guardian is the one dealing now with the assets.
Hmm.
So, you know, that transparency is important. And, you know, what the motivating factor is for a lot of children here in this situation, they're wanting to not only protect their parent,
mm-hmm.
but they also want to protect their inheritance.
Yes, their future assets.
Right.
So
another discussion we're oftentimes having in the area of this is, well, she's got the power of attorney and she just bought a new car and she doesn't have the money to do that. And she's taking that money. And I bet she's taking mama or daddy over there to do a new will. And mm-hmm. I bet she's doing it. So
a lot of suspicion.
It gets a lot broader than just the power of attorney in many situations. And the guardianship proceeding is what can shine some light on all that and give us some transparency and give us the tools to be able to see how this, attorney in fact has been acting.
Hmm.
So that's the process.
And Ben, before, you know, in a way, as to those comments, before it's too late,
mm-hmm.
in a way, you can always come forward and challenge certain actions that a power of attorney has done or the capacity of the testator relative to the will.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, those cases are an uphill battle. And if the child can get in there a bit earlier, before those kinds of transfers are made, before the will is changed,
mm-hmm.
Things of that nature, it does change the dynamic of the file.
Again, find out more at HarvellandCollins.com.